Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and we have what I believe is going to be a very fun Friday show. Of course, the NBA has been the topic of discussion over the last week or so, but today I want to focus on college football. 56 days away from kickoff, and of course you'll be able to follow the Utah Utes right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. So let's talk college football. We're going to bring in the great Phil Steele. He is the writer of the Phil Steele magazine, the college football preview that comes out every year. I call it the Bible of college football. In-depth coverage on every FBS college football team. Phil Steele's college football preview. It's actually in stores right now. If you love college football, I'm telling you, this is the magazine that you have to get. I love it when Phil comes on the show. Today we're going to talk Utah Ute football. We'll touch on BYU, the Pac-12, and we'll take a look at national contenders. Phil has also listed his four college football teams that he believes will go to the playoffs. We'll talk to him about that a little bit later as well. Looking forward to it. That'll be on the show today. Now, not much has changed as far as who's dominating the national headlines. It is the NBA once again. A couple of deals have been announced, and we will start with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They find a way to avoid a massive $300 million payroll, which would have been the record because of the repeat offender of the luxury tax, and they will find a way to buy out Carmelo Anthony or move out from Carmelo Anthony's contract. This could deliver the Thunder over $100 million in savings. Now, the financial implications of Melo opting into that $27.9 million contract a few weeks back was huge, because they could use the stretch provision on Carmelo if they want to get away from him. And that contract would eliminate $107 million off the payroll and the tax bill. But the Thunder's first plan would be to try to find a trade partner. Look, it's not happening. They're not going to find a trade partner for Carmelo. Already, there are rumors circulating about which teams would be interested in acquiring Carmelo once he is waived with that stretch provision. Because Carmelo has a veto trade power. He has a no trade clause. Okay, so if they want to go ahead and trade him to someone that's just looking for an eventual salary dump or to get to the floor, and I don't even know which teams, if any, are not at the salary floor at the moment, he can veto that deal. That's not going to happen because, again, nobody's going to be interested in Melo when you take a look at the statistics and what he brought to the table last season. What will happen is they will buy him out and he will find a suitor relatively soon. In fact, three teams have already emerged as the front runners to sign Carmelo should he, in fact, receive that stretch provision. The Rockets, the Heat, and the Lakers. I'm going to cancel out Miami. I believe the Lakers or the Rockets will acquire Carmelo, and I'm okay with both teams gaining his service, and this is why Billy Donovan tried to play him at a stretch four last year. Not going to happen. The efficiency rating for the Thunder when Paul George and Russell Westbrook were on the court together was like plus 16. Drops all the way to plus 5 when Melo was on the court with them. Okay, so when you look at the setup, it was just a disaster waiting to happen in OKC, and I think a lot of pundits predicted that going into last season. It was splashy. I understand what Sam Presti was doing. He was trying to tip his hat to Russell Westbrook and Paul George both by saying, look, we will go all in. We will spend money. Don't let the James Harden deal fool you from a few years back. That's where they were going with Carmelo. It was splashy. Okay, but with that being said, statistically, Carmelo did not live up to a $27 million contract. That's just factual. However, he was able to shoot fairly efficiently from downtown. I know the playoffs, Jazz fans will point and laugh. Look, that was not a clear indication of what Melo had done all year long for OKC. He still proved that he could knock down a shot, and I believe he still has some basketball left in him. Across the board of the regular season last year, played in 78 games, so he was durable. Averaged 16 points a game. That's a great third option on any team in the league. He shot 35% from deep. Okay, you know, when I look at the rosters for both LA and Houston, there's a spot for someone who just hangs out on the wing and can knock down 35% of their threes. I can see that happening. He shot 40% from the field. Not ideal, but at the same time, he also played with Russell Westbrook, and the dynamic of playing with Westbrook opposed to playing with Harden or LeBron is completely different. I think Melo would fit in nicely with either the Lakers or the Rockets. In fact, I believe if Houston wants to contend, they will need someone to spread the floor like Carmelo. OKC is going to move on from him. This is not the year in which Oklahoma City is going to contend for the Western Conference crown. I believe OKC is in a similar situation to LA. LeBron signed for 4 years. Paul George signed for 4 years. Right now, it's Golden State's time, and these two teams are not going to get caught up and taking on a deal or paying the luxury tax in order to compete with Golden State when they can wait, show patience, and try to make a play in next year's free agency pool. That's what's happening. Carmelo becomes attractable for the Lakers or the Rockets if he is in fact waived, because you're going to get him relatively cheap, maybe even at the veteran minimum. It's possible if he wants to join a championship contending team. And remember, Carmelo Anthony has never won an NBA championship, so that is extremely possible. Not the only news and notes coming out of the NBA today. Tony Parker actually will be wearing another team's uniform next year. This is going to look odd. 17 years with the Spurs, Tony Parker is moving on. He has signed a 2-year, $10 million deal with the Charlotte Hornets. Instantly, this sparks the rumors that Charlotte will look to move on from Kemba Walker. I don't think that this move right here has anything to do with Kemba's situation, because Tony Parker proved last year that he has lost a step or two. There's definitely some relationship issues with Tony Parker and with Kawhi Leonard, and I don't know if this is San Antonio's way of telling Kawhi Leonard, look, if you're not happy with Tony Parker, we'll get rid of him. We're trying to repair the relationship. I don't know if the two correlate or not, but last year, Tony Parker was not good. And at this stage in the game and free agency, I don't mind Charlotte giving him $10 million over 2 years. I'm fine with that. But the fact is, Tony Parker averaged less than 10 points per game. It was the first time since he was a 19-year-old kid back in 2001 that happened in the NBA. Only averaged 19 minutes per game, the lowest of his career. Field goal attempts, lowest of his career. He averaged 3 makes per game, 7 attempted per game. That was also the lowest of his career. And he shot 45% from the field. Again, one of the lowest of his career, only outshining what he was able to do as a rookie. So at 36 going into next year, Tony Parker's definitely lost his step. Is he a perfect backup for Kemba Walker? Yes. He can give you 20 minutes a game, and it's relatively I don't want to call it a bargain, but it's a relatively low contract for someone of Tony Parker's name recognition alone. You get rid of Dwight Howard, you bring in Tony Parker, he's going to spell Kemba Walker out of the backcourt. I'm fine with it. Those are the two news and notes out of the NBA. Now, with that being said, let's talk Major League Baseball. We were going over the standings yesterday, and we have a new leader in the NL West. The Dodgers have managed to climb all the way back to take over the NL West as far as winning percentage-wise go. They hold just a slim couple of percentage point better than the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's the only changes as far as the standings go, and both the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks will, in fact, be in action tonight. We'll take a look at the full schedule front to back. In fact, right now we have a game going on, and the surging Cincinnati Reds hold a 2-0 lead over the surging Chicago Cubs. The Cubs obviously have played some of the best baseball in the majors over the last couple of weeks. The Reds, they were dreadful at the beginning of the year, but now they've actually played some decent baseball. They lead 2-0 in the bottom of the fourth inning right now. We take a look at the games that will come our way in the 5 o'clock hour. The Texas Rangers will battle the Detroit Tigers. 5:05, we get the Marlins and the Nationals, and the Phillies will travel to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates. 5:07 tonight, it's the Yankees Yankees and the Blue Jays, along with the A's at the Indians. And the Rays will battle the Mets. Jacob deGrom will take the mound for New York. 6:10 tonight, we get Atlanta at Milwaukee. I love this series. Absolutely love it. Atlanta right now at 49-37. Milwaukee at 52-35. The Brewers and the Cubs in an interesting race for the top of the Central. 6:10, we get the Orioles and the Twins. The White Sox at the World Series champion Astros. Lance McCullers with that impressive 9-3 mark for Houston will be on the mound. 6:15, it's the Red Sox at the Royals. 7 o'clock hour, Padres and Diamondbacks. Zach Godley has struggled on the mound for Arizona, but he'll try to put together a decent outing to just halt the slump that Arizona is in. 8:07 tonight, interleague matchup. The Dodgers will battle the Angels. 8:10, Rockies at the Mariners. In the nightcap tonight, it is the Cardinals and the Giants. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We'll break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming your way. Plus, we'll catch up with Phil Still to talk some college football on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports. We're back in just a moment.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Welcome back to a Friday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. 56 days away from the college football season. I'm keeping track, absolutely. Of course, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, we'll be bringing you Utah Ute football throughout the year. The Utes will open up the season this year with Weber State. We are going to talk Utah Utes, BYU, and the entire college football landscape right now with college football writer Phil Still. Every year, Phil puts out the Bible of College Football. It's an in-depth magazine geared towards every Division I football squad. Phil, what a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Hey, always a pleasure, Jordan. Good to talk to you again.
Well, Phil, let's dive right into it. I mean, we are a month and a half away from college football, and I know the magazine is out, it's in stores, it's on bookstore shelves, and you can also download it online as well. And we can start by talking about the magazine. I mean, you're back for a whole nother year, and like I said, it's the Bible of college football, and there's multiple ways that you can get your hands on the magazine.
Yeah, the magazine is 352 pages, and it's available at all the fine bookstores out there, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, CVS, Publix, Target, Walgreens, Walmart, and they sell out pretty quick this time of year, so if you're going to get out to the newsstands and buy one, I recommend you do it this week. You can also go online and get the magazine, and that's at philsteele.com. That's Phil, STEELE.com, and when you go there, it'll give you information on how to order the magazine, where we'll send it to you, or you can download it to your iPad or iPhone, your Android device, Kindle, or even your computer. So there's a lot of different ways to get the magazine, but once you get it, you'll find it's got 3 to 4 times the amount of information of any other college football preview, and we give you the same amount of coverage on Utah State that we give you on Alabama and USC. 2 full pages, everything located in the same exact spot on every page on all 130 FBS teams.
Fantastic stuff. Phil, actually, I want to give the listeners just a little bit more of a background before I start picking your brain about some Utah college football here. You've been publishing this magazine since, I believe, 1995, and it's basically entirely written by you personally. So, I mean, you put 365 days worth of work into this magazine, hands down.
Yeah, absolutely. And we start, you know, full bore on the magazine the Sunday after Thanksgiving, where we can actually start getting the right-hand pages done for the teams whose season are complete, start going through the last year's season to read through all the articles that are written about the team, do the first write-through process, then do our postseason write-through. Then the second write-through is the pre-spring. We add in the freshmen, and then also any transfers in or out. And then the third one, very important one, is the post-spring write-through. And what I like to do is talk to as many of the coaches as I can. This year I talked to over 100 of the 130 coaches. Go over their team with them. They let me know strengths and weaknesses of the players. The interviews generally take about an hour. And they put my players in order as well. If a player moved during the spring, went from right guard to left guard, they let me know and we get it all updated.
Well, Phil, you're definitely the college football guru, so let's dive into it. I want to start with the Utah Utes, and we can talk about the Pac-12 South. I don't know that there is a more difficult conference, division conference, in all of college football to predict than the Pac-12 South, and I guess this is a perfect starting point. I mean, there's a couple of different directions that I think you could go with who you would believe is the favorite. Give me your take on the Pac-12 South this year.
Yeah, the Pac-12 South is a wide-open division this year, and you can make a case for a lot of different teams. I know some folks are making a case for Chip Kelly and UCLA, maybe what Herm Edwards has taken over at Arizona State. He's got a veteran quarterback in Manny Wilkins. But I think it might come down four teams really battling it out. USC is going to be the preseason favorite this year. It seems like they always are. They've got three capable quarterbacks in Matt Fink, JT Daniels, and Jack Sears. They've got an outstanding running back in Stephen Carr. My number 9 rated offensive line in the country, number 6 rated set of receivers. And defensively, they may have the best defense in the conference. They've got practically everybody back from last year. They only lose 9 Lettermen. They got Porter Gustin up front, Cam Smith at linebacker, Iman Marshall at cornerback. The linebacking core is 3rd best in the country, as are the DBs, and they're solid on special teams. Now, the experience level, they're at number 106, and they do have to play this year at Utah. So I think, and as well as at Arizona this year, and I think that opens up the door. And when you look at Utah, they're a team that I think is a primetime contender. If they had USC scheduled, USC avoids 2 key teams out of the north in Washington and Oregon. Utah has to face Washington, Oregon, and Stanford, all 3 of the top teams out of the north this year, and that's going to make it a pretty tough schedule, but I really like the talent Utah has on hand, and I'm sure we'll speak more in depth about Utah probably on your next question, so I'll skip over them a little bit. Go to Arizona. They got Khalil Tate at the quarterback spot, and then I think when I talked to Coach Sumlin this year, you know, he likes the talent he has, he inherits. They got my number 22 offense. Defensively, he feels they'll be improved, but they still had a long way to go. But I think anytime you got Khalil Tate on the field, you got a chance. And then never discount Mike McIntyre. I thought last year he was in a rebuilding year. They still went 5-7, basically one play away from making it to a bowl game. 10 returning starters this year, solid at the quarterback with Steven Montez, good receiving core and offensive line. And, you know, McIntyre's now in his 6th year there. And I think he'll sneakily have them contending as well.
Well, let's talk about Utah here. We did have Coach Kyle Whittingham on the show just a couple of weeks ago, and we talked a little bit about spring practice and, you know, the red and white game and going all through it. And I know as far as front to back goes defensively, this is where Utah always stands out. Coach Whittingham is a defensive-minded individual. Phil, I personally like the defensive backs for Utah this year, and I think that's where we're going to see the most growth if we break down an individual aspect of this team. I have big expectations for the secondary.
And I'm in agreement with you. I've got them rated number 10 in the country as far as the secondaries go. Last year they finished number 5 in my quarterback, or pass defense ratings, I should say. And even with moving a safety like Chase Hansen over to Rover, which I think is a needed move to the linebacking position because the linebackers lost a lot, they're still deep. They've got a couple of guys like Jalen Johnson, a nice 6-foot corner. And had he not had an injured shoulder last year, probably would have had, been a bigger factor. And you look at the fact that I think he's going to be one of your top corners, along with Julian Blackman, and then you got a Kerryon Ballard at the free safety spot. This is a very good secondary, and they're going to rank high in the pass-D rankings once again.
We can move and talk about the offensive side of the ball here. Of course, the most notable position, always quarterback. That's what everybody wants to talk about. Tyler Huntley is a sophomore, completed about 63% of his passes. I don't know what the expectation should be for Tyler Huntley. We've had conversations with Coach Witt about that as well, and he called him a fierce competitor, one of the best competitors that you will ever come across. Phil, in some aspects, I think he took some big steps forward last year, yet at the same time, there were some inconsistencies. Give me your thoughts on Tyler Huntley.
You know, I think if the injury hadn't happened last year, we would have seen a better Tyler Huntley throughout the season. Remember, like, the first game he came back off the injury, he seemed a little rusty, and they struggled offensively. He threw some interceptions and basically cost them the game, but I thought he improved as the season went on. Really surprised me he was named the starter at the beginning of the year, and then I liked the way he played at the beginning of the year prior to getting injured. So I think as long as he stays healthy all year, he'll be pretty good. But he is going to be pushed by Jack Tuttle, who's a 6 6'3", 205, true freshman. This guy's a workout warrior. He's got a big arm. He's mobile. And ran a similar offense in high school, so I think that's a big plus to have. And, you know, last year it surprised me that Huntley was named the starter, so who knows? You never know if Jack Tuttle can actually win that job in August. But Coach Whittingham feels they're way ahead at the quarterback position of where they were last year, especially in the knowledge of the offense, because remember, they switched up their offensive coordinator last year.
Right, absolutely. And I know this year they have their top four rushers back from last season, including Zach Moss. And I have to believe that a lot of Huntley's success, being that he is such a run-oriented quarterback, would have to fall on Zach Moss, who averaged about 90 yards per game last season.
Yeah, and I thought Moss got better at the second half of the year. It's sort of like mid-year, seemed like the light switch came on for him, and everything happened. He's a physical runner, catches the ball well, picks up blitzes well. He's really a complete back at 212 pounds. I think he's an NFL prospect. So, you know, I think Moss, and the fact that he's got players like Shine and Henry Cole and Green behind him, I think that keeps him from being maybe overworked in the games and fresh in the fourth quarter. So I think they have a nice combination at the running back spot, and they do have one of the top running back units in the country.
Now, Phil, before we end this particular talk on the Pac-12, we got to go over to the Pac-12 North here for just a moment, because while the Pac-12 South is wide open, to me, there's one clear path here in the Pac-12 North, and that's Washington. They seem to be the clear favorites. Chris Peterson's returning 16 starters. He's got Jake Browning. He's got Miles Gaskin. He's got probably the best 1-2 duo as far as seniors go on the offensive line up front. To me, I think there's Washington, and then there's maybe everyone else in the entire Pac-12, much less the Pac-12 North.
Yeah, I think there's probably two teams that could contend with Washington, but I liked Washington so much I put them in the playoffs. And, you know, the Pac-12 being much maligned after the bowl season they had last year. But I think that Chris Peterson's got his best team he's put on the field. Jake Browning's a guy who had 43 touchdown passes 2 years ago, dropped down to 19 last year. I think he sort of regains his 16 form. He'll be much stronger. They're solid at running back. Miles Gaskin's got three 1,300-yard seasons under his belt. Offensive line is solid at number 13 in the country. And defensively, 9 starters back. In fact, they have my number 11 defensive line, number 11 set of linebackers, number 2 DBs. 5th best defense in the country. If they get past Auburn in the opener, they will be favored in all the rest of their games. Toughest games figure to be at Oregon and, of course, at Utah. Those are the toughest two games of the season. Now, Stanford, never going to discount David Shaw Company.
Sure,
they got a
right.
Pretty good running back in the backfield, and Bryce Love. He's running behind my number 4 rated offensive line in the country. And remember, Love was basically running on one leg in the second half of last year. I think he'd be much stronger this year if he can, and he topped 2,000 yards last year. But if he can stay 100% healthy, look out. They've got KJ Costello. Defensively, they've got one of the best linebacking cores in the country. My number 4 set of linebackers, number 4 offensive line. But they do have to play both Washington and Oregon on the road. And then if you're looking for a sleeper in the North, I'm going to throw out the Ducks, because Justin Herbert's a guy who, at quarterback last year, they averaged 52 points per game with Herbert at quarterback. Without him, 15. Herbert's healthy. He's one of the top NFL prospect. He's got an outstanding offensive line in front of him, which I rate number 12. The defense will be improved. Cristobal always did a good job at Florida International, and I think he'll do a good job here at Oregon. And they get Washington and Stanford at home. That makes him a sleeper in the North, but clearly I'm going with Washington, especially if I'm picking him to make the playoffs.
The next question I had about the North was Oregon, because again, when you have 3 coaches in 3 years, that does definitely throw some uncertainty around. That's not an issue, though. You're not worried about that.
No, and the fact that Cristobal was on the staff last year, if it was a complete 3 new head coaches coming in with 3 new staffs each year, I would have a concern. But Cristobal was on the staff last year, so there's not major changes that are taking place. So it helps them a lot. You go back to there's a program in the Sun Belt that lost their head coach 4 straight years at Arkansas State, and you know that was tough to survive something like that. 4 brand new head coaches each and every year, and then there's always a lot of transfers, but there weren't that many transfers this time.
Again, we're being joined right now by Phil Steele, and the magazine is out right now. Phil Steele's College Football Preview. Make sure you go pick that up on bookstore shelves right now. Also, you can get the downloadable copy online. Phil, there's so much more I'd love to talk with you about. Do you have time for one more segment with us?
Sure thing.
Excellent. Plenty more coming up with college football writer Phil Steele. We'll touch on BYU, plus talk about some of the national contenders when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Back on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports, talking college football. Last segment, joined by college football writer Phil Still. Do not forget the magazine, Phil Still's College Football Preview, is out right now on bookstore shelves and also available online. You got to get this if you're a college football fan. I'm telling you, it's the most comprehensive college football preview that you will find. Phil, we talked University of Utah last segment. Now we're going to move over and speak on BYU. Thank you again for hanging with us for one more segment today.
Oh, absolutely.
Phil, let's talk about BYU here for a second. Kalani Sitake took the steps to address last year's disappointing 4-9 record. That was the worst at BYU since 1970. The biggest problem last year for BYU was the fact that the offense averaged just over 17 points per game. This is probably a make it or break it year for Sitake. What are your expectations for BYU going into 2018?
Much better team, and I think they should be able to make a bowl game this year. Now, I know BYU fans are used to much higher expectations than that. They usually walk into the season thinking double-digit wins are a possibility, but let's take it in steps. Now, last year's team, I will say this. In 2016, in Sitake's first year when they went 9-4, they had my number 4 most experienced team in the country. Now, last year they dropped down to my number 89 most experienced team in the country, and the record dropped. Well, this year they're back up to number 30, and I think the biggest difference is going to be the offense, because last year's offense, I don't feel fit Tanner Mangum, and I didn't like the backup quarterbacks as much, and it really wasn't good on offense the entire season. I think Mangum's a better fit for the Grimes offense. He's got a good set of running backs that are back. They're going to use a running back by committee this year. They don't have one standout guy, but you're going to see a whole bunch of guys used. And then when you look at the rest of the unit, tight end is going to be a focal point of the offense here, and I think that's going to be emphasized throughout the year. Defensively, I've got my number 47 defensive line, number 28 linebackers. Now, when you look at the schedule, they are going to be a clear-cut underdog at Arizona, at Wisconsin, at Washington, at Boise, and even at Utah, a team that they've had a lot of trouble beating in recent years. So they've got a couple of toss-up games early, the Cal game early, the Utah State game early, and don't discount Utah State. It's one of Matt Wells' best teams he's had in a couple of years. If they get those games early, then I think you'll see BYU get to maybe 7 wins in a bowl and play with a lot more confidence. And really the biggest area, they got to get that offense going. You don't win very many games when you're averaging the points they did, and that 17 points per game was helped by 41, 31, and 30 points down the stretch.
Right.
They were feeble in the first half of the year last year.
Well, and I think the defense played well enough to actually win them a couple of games. I'm going to go out on a limb and actually say, Phil, that I felt last year the defense actually put them in position to at least become bowl eligible.
Yeah, and it's not many teams that lose 9 games that only allow 24.7 points per game. You look across the country, that had to be in the top 30-35 in the country in defense points allowed, 24.7, especially in today's wide-open offensive football where everybody's pushing the tempo.
As far as the quarterbacks go, you mentioned that you didn't really like the backup position last year for BYU and Tanner Mangum, who I think will have, and there's some questions regarding the injury that he suffered last year, but you have Bo Hodge, you have Joe Critchlow. Are these two kids that you think can at least push Tanner Mangum?
And also watch Zach Wilson, the true frosh. He was in for the spring. I think he's in the mix. He's got good footwork, and he's got a big future ahead of him. So I think he could potentially step in there. Critchlow is a guy who did well in the spring. He had 9-12 for 130 yards and 1 scrimmage. So I think he's picking up the offense. And same with Hodge. I think I saw improvement out of him this year. So I'm much more comfortable with the backup position.
Phil, let's go to the entire landscape of college football. Now, if you don't mind, is it okay if I give the listeners your prediction for the playoffs? Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, so you like Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Washington. That's who you like to reach the college football playoff this year.
That's correct. Really going on a limb there with that Alabama pick, huh?
No, that's okay. I mean, of course they're going to be there in the top 4, right? I mean, but looking at it front to back, Clemson, Ohio State, and Washington, give me a couple of teams that we haven't talked about that could be the wild card to mess up that Final Four prediction that you have.
Well, number one would be Georgia. You know, when you look at Georgia, they may not be quite as good as last year's squad. They go from 10 returning starters on defense to 5. They maybe go from a number 3 defense to a number 15 defense. Still pretty doggone good. They've got DeAndre Swift at running back to fill in for Chubb and Michelle as long as he stays healthy. And when you look at Georgia, they'll probably be favored in all 12 games this year. The only game I've got them losing is the SEC championship game to Alabama. And if that happens, the fact they were in the championship game, took it to overtime last year, were undefeated during the regular season, I think that would definitely give them a chance of sneaking into the playoff picture. A couple other teams to look at. I think when you look at the Big Ten, I've got Ohio State in there, but really it's a 5-team race. I can make you a case for Michigan State, Penn State, or even Wisconsin winning the Big Ten this year, and I do think the team that wins the Big Ten will be able to make the playoffs. So those other teams should all be in the race. A couple teams from the Big 12. I left the Big 12 out of the picture because I think it's much like the Pac-12 South. The Big 12 is a wide-open conference. 6 teams have a shot at winning it. The best 2 chances, Oklahoma and Texas. I would put both those out there as teams that could slip into the playoffs. And then I'll give you one outlier. Somebody that's in nobody's top 10, nobody's talking about as a potential playoff team. It's my number one surprise team in the country, a non-top 10 team I think can make the playoffs, and that's Notre Dame. And when I look at Notre Dame, you know, last year they were my number one most improved team. It went from 4 to 10 wins. And in fact, at one point late in the year, they were number 3 in the country. Well, they lost 2 of their last 4 games, so now they're off the radar. But they've got 9 starters back on defense, maybe the best defense they had since the last time they appeared in the title game, 2012. And offensively, they got Winbush back despite losing 2 first-round draft picks on the offensive line. They remain solid. They've got good skill personnel. And then look at their schedule. None of their 4 road games are easy. It's Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Northwestern, and USC, but all are in the winnable category. Toughest 3 games are at home, Stanford, Michigan, and Florida State, which they get to play in November. I think Notre Dame's got a shot at running the table this year and being that non-top 10 team that can compete for a playoff spot.
I'm glad you bring up Notre Dame, and you mentioned Brandon Wimbush coming back to me. There was no doubt that this kid would be the number one quarterback going into the upcoming season. I know he suffered some injuries, battled with injuries all last year, and maybe that had something to do with the inconsistencies late in the game, but I think you hit it right on the head with the defense, Phil. This is a team, based on what they have early on in the schedule, I can see them making some waves, and I still am high on Brandon Wimbush. I really am. I think that this kid is the real deal.
Yeah, you know, in the bowl game when Ian Book took over and led them to the win, you have a lot of folks were speculating it was a possibility Book would just take over the starting job. But Wimbush is a guy who I think showed a lot of improvement in the spring in the pass game. He was mostly more of a running quarterback this past year, but I think he really improved the pass game. He's got capable quarterbacks to throw to, and I think that's going to show up, especially early in the year.
In your opinion, what would that mean for the college football playoff to have a team like Notre Dame, an independent, sneak in? I mean, that could actually be the turning point in eventually turning this into an 8-team playoff, right? If you're leaving out 2 Power 5 conferences out of the college football playoff, maybe even 3 the way things could work out, that could be a big turning point for college football.
Yeah, it definitely would not make the conference commissioners happy, because I know last year when 2 of the conferences were left out, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, that was 2 pretty powerful conference commissioners sitting by the sideline. But I like how they reacted. I could tell you, if you're a conference commissioner, you're probably rooting against Notre Dame because you don't want them taking one of your spots. But I don't know if it would necessarily flip us to the 8-team playoff, but I can tell you it would make the conference commissioners unhappy.
So, Phil, lastly, before I let you go, the overall landscape of the upcoming 2018 college football season. You like Alabama. We've talked about Clemson, Ohio State, and Washington as being your Final 4. It sounds, at least what I've gathered from you and, of course, in reading the magazine, Alabama seems to be the cream of the crop once again.
Yeah, it looks like it this year. You know, they've got 2 capable quarterbacks in Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts. They've got top 10 units across the board. I mean, there might be a unit that slips down at number 20 somewhere, but they're almost all in the top 10. And then you factor in their schedule. This is a team that's going to be a double-digit favorite in every single game this year. Nobody else can say that. Even Clemson, they've got 4 games where they won't be a double-digit favorite when they play Texas A&M, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Boston College, all on the road this year. But Bama will be a double-digit favorite in every game.
Phil Steele, again, college football guru, taking out the time to join us. I don't know how else to refer to you, Phil. I look forward to the magazine being released every year. It's a must-have. I'm going to give you the opportunity once again. Tell the listeners to pick this up and prepare for the college football season, which is about a month and a half away.
Well, I appreciate that, Jordan. Once again, the magazine is out there. It's available right now at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, CVS, Publix, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. All I ask when you go out to the newsstands, open up a copy. Compare it to every other magazine on that stand. You'll see 3 to 4 times the amount of information. And like I said, we give you 2 full pages on a team like Utah State or Liberty, the same amount of coverage we give you on Alabama and USC, and all the information, same spot, every page, for quick, easy lookup. Plus, you can download it to your iPad or iPhone, your Android device, Kindle, your computer. Just go to philsteele.com. That's STEELE.com. If you go to philsteele.com, you'll be able to find information on how to download it. You can even order the magazine if your bookstores are sold out in the area, and they do sell out so quick. So let's go to philsteele.com. And finally, follow me on Twitter. It's at philsteele042. That's at philsteele042.
Yeah, for those who are into the Twitter, Phil definitely a terrific Twitter follow. Phil, I look forward to the conversation every year. Thank you so much again for taking out the time, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Always good talking football with you, Jordan. You have a great summer, my friend.
You too, Phil. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's Phil Steele, college football writer, breaking down quickly in 20 minutes what we can expect as far as the world of college football goes. Again, 56 days away from kickoff. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll move over to the NBA right here on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Set to close out this week of Drive Time Sports. It was a short yet fun week. We covered a lot of different topics throughout the national and the local sports front. That high school statewide moratorium will come to an end on Monday. Because of that, we just did not have a lot of local, we didn't have any American Legion baseball, no local high school sports at all. But coming up next week, we're going to start diving into the high school football season as well. We're about a month away from kickoff, and of course you'll be able to follow Emory High School all year long right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Carbon High School on 95.3 The Peak, KRPX, our sister station. And of course Utah Utes right here on KOAL as well. So we definitely have you covered as far as football goes. And when the NFL rolls back around, we'll have it for you on Thursday nights once again. Before we end the show today, I do want to jump back over to the NBA. The Jazz had a press conference today for Dante Exum, Derek Favors, and Raul Neto. It is important to note that while all the free agency announcements were made over the past week, they couldn't be official until today. And so Derek Favors, now officially a member of the Jazz, a 2-year, $36 million deal, which, you know, I've talked to a lot of different sports writers, NBA writers from around the country over the last week, and they're not high on that deal for Derek Favors. I'll tell you why I am. The Jazz had no big free agency plans this year. They didn't. Proof of that is giving Dante Exum $33 million, which I talked about in depth on the show yesterday. Giving Derek Favors $18 million and getting a team option for year two is fine. If he improves drastically this year, the Jazz have him under contract for one more season. If he doesn't, they terminate the team option. At this stage in the game, I look back at when the Jazz acquired Favors. I mean, they won the Deron Williams trade, hands down. He is the longest tenured member of this team, and when Gobert went down last season, he actually played formidable for the Jazz. I have no problem with that signing at all. None. In fact, I think that was very smart on both ends. You give Favors a payday, you tip your hat to the guy. Again, longest tenured member of the team that gave you quality minutes. If he can stay healthy over the course of a season, I think that's a productive signing. Exum, I don't want to go down that route again. I talked about this yesterday. Didn't care for it. Neto, loved the signing. The Jazz did just fine. They introduced all three. Well, I shouldn't say introduced. Had a press conference to announce the signing with all three of those individuals today. Now it's just dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and it gets interesting over the next week for those who don't have teams yet. And there's still guys out there who haven't been signed, and there's still some trades to be made, a la Kawhi Leonard. That will be something to watch over the weekend, of course, with Major League Baseball. And here locally, do not forget that our Carbon Cal Ripken 12-year-old All-Star State Champions are holding a fundraiser tonight and tomorrow. And just about out of time tonight, 5 o'clock is when they're fundraising car wash will come to an end, but they'll be back at it tomorrow. You can get the information on that at CastleCountryRadio.com. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. You have a very safe weekend. If you missed Phil Steele's interview today, we will replay that for you on Sunday during the Best of Drive Time Sports. NASCAR racing coming your way tomorrow at 4 p.m. Have a terrific weekend. Be safe. We are out.